Thank you, Dominic. Track 2. Thank you and rest in peace, our beloved Queen. The death of the Queen has been met with grief, shock and gratitude for her exceptional life of service, dedication, devotion and duty. The Queen loved Norfolk and Norfolk loved her back. We pay tribute with words by Rowan Mantell and Chris Bishop.
The Queen was the only monarch and head of state most of us had known. For 70 years she reigned over us, and now she is gone. The Queen is dead. Long live the King. It is dramatic, sudden and stark. In an instant, everything changes. In Norfolk, we feel her loss especially deeply. She was part of our county for her entire life, visiting as a child, bringing her own young family here, celebrating Christmases and New Year's at Sandringham. She opened our hospitals, libraries and university departments, inspected military parades and toured town centres and factories, just as she did across the country. But she also said the people of Norfolk held a special place in her affections. Here her story was woven into day-to-day life. In West Newton, she took part in meetings of the local Women's Institute. Her racing pigeons were kept in Wolferton. Her beloved husband, Prince Philip, spent much of his retirement at Wood Farm Cottage, while she continued fulfilling the demanding duties of head of state. Although there were warnings that the 96-year-old monarch's strength was waning, her death was still a shock. An afternoon of increasingly alarming updates finished with the sombre news that her earthly journey was over, her duty done. As well as being a moment of international significance, the grief which followed was for her family's loss of a mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother, as well as for our loss of a head of state, steadfast figurehead, and faith leader. Her face, perhaps the most famous in the world, was on our coins and stamps. Our nation was governed in her name. She spoke for us in times of trouble and rejoiced with us in times of celebration. She marked tragedies and triumphs alongside us at ceremonies of remembrance or thanksgiving and at festivals, receptions and arts and sports events, including that breathtaking, brilliant role in the opening ceremony of the London Olympics. At the start of her reign, the Queen promised to devote her life to serving her people. One of her final acts was to formally appoint the new Prime Minister.
As we continue to mourn, grief is mixed with gratitude for 7 decades of sacrificial service. We knew with our heads that this day would come, yet our hearts never quite accepted it, said the Lord Lieutenant of Norfolk, Lady Philippa Dannatt. Few of us can remember a time when Her Majesty was not central to our lives over the decades, and fewer still can imagine how life in this country will be without her at the helm. Elizabeth II was not born to be queen, but when her uncle abdicated and her father was crowned king, her future of luxury, surrounded by the horses, dogs and countryside she loved, became uniquely demanding. The role of monarch imposed punishing schedules, unrelenting scrutiny, endless boxes of official papers, and the constant need to subjugate her own preferences and desires to public expectations and statutory duties. It's no wonder that generations of the royal family have loved the peace and isolation of Sandringham. She was never happier than when she was in Norfolk. She felt part of the community in Norfolk, and I feel incredibly privileged to have met and to have known her, said former West Norfolk MP Lord Bellingham. Elizabeth II's roots stretched deep into Norfolk. Born in London on April 22, 1926, she became Queen when King George VI died in his sleep at Sandringham. She was just 25 and flew home from a tour of the Commonwealth, travelling straight to Sandringham, where her father lay in the tiny church of St Mary Magdalene. The people of Norfolk paid their respects to the old king and the new queen in 1952, lining lanes between the church and the Royal Railway Station at Wolferton, from where the king's body was taken to London. Both George VI and his father, George V, had loved this landscape of pasture and pine woods, sloping down to salt marsh and sea.
Its 20,000 acres include the royal stud, where the queen bred her racehorses, the lofts for her racing pigeons, and the Sandringham kennels where her gun dogs were raised. Until recently, the queen might be spotted out riding and would work her retrievers on pheasant shoots, dressed in a wax jacket and a headscarf to keep out the chill as she directed the dogs. As a child, the then Princess Elizabeth would cycle out to the fields at harvest time with her younger sister, the late Princess Margaret, and their parents. In her first Christmas speech from her study at Sandringham, the young queen pledged to dedicate herself to her country and Commonwealth. "My father and my grandfather before him worked all their lives to unite our people ever more closely and to maintain its ideals which were so dear to their hearts," she said. "I shall strive to carry on their work." She also maintained her father's and grandfather's links with Norfolk, sharing in tragedies as well as triumphs. She opened hospitals and schools, toured factories and farms, and visited King's Lynn and Hunstanton in the aftermath of the devastating 1953 floods, which claimed 100 lives across the county. From her Silver Jubilee year of 1977, the Queen opened parts of Sandringham House to the public every summer, while hundreds of acres of woodland and heath are open all year round. Hundreds of people still work on the estate or live in tied cottages after retiring from jobs with the royal family. They were the generations of cooks, chambermaids, grooms and gardeners to whom the Queen was simply Mum. At Christmas, the Queen would arrive at Sandringham a few days before December 25th to oversee arrangements, including selecting a tree from her own sawmill as the centrepiece for the house. In recent years, she often took the train from London to King's Lynn, where she would be greeted by station staff before being driven the final few miles to Sandringham. Family members would arrive in reverse order of seniority on Christmas Eve, and on Christmas morning, well-wishers would gather to exchange festive greetings as they walked to church. Christmas dinner for the royals was Norfolk turkey and vegetables grown at Sandringham, and then they would watch the Queen's speech, a tradition continuing George V's first Christmas broadcast live from Sandringham in 1932. During her stay at Sandringham, the Queen would treat members of the Sunday School choir to lunch at West Newton Village Hall and give each child a book, only leaving Norfolk after February 6, her Ascension Day. The royal family's strong Norfolk roots are revealed by the fact that Norfolk had more royal warrants than any other county in the country. More than 40 businesses held royal warrants, supplying goods and services ranging from food and tailoring to scaffolding. Leaders of the many Norfolk organisations, events and charities of which the Queen was patron are also mourning her loss. They include the Royal Norfolk Show, the University of East Anglia, the Queen Elizabeth Hospital in King's Lynn, the Friends of Norwich Cathedral, the Norfolk Wildlife Trust, and the Village Cricket Club at Sandringham, which fields a team of workers from the Royal Estate.
The Queen was the Honorary Air Commodore at RAF Marham, where she was a frequent visitor and took a keen interest in its staff and their deployments around the world. The Queen was also President of the Sandringham WI, and in January she would usually attend a meeting where she would tell members about her previous year and join them for games and tea and cake. "For the 2 hours of a meeting, she was one of the ladies," said Yvonne Brown, Vice President of Sandringham WI. "She had her table with three other ladies. She used to pour the tea and offer them cakes." She'd been a member for 79 years and 8 months at the time of her death, making her one of the WI's longest-serving members. A spokesperson for the National Federation of Women's Institutes said she was a loyal and dedicated member of the WI for 80 years and never failed to show her support for us throughout her time as the Queen. We thank her for her dedication, service and fellowship. Many of our members have fond memories of her and will treasure those years for years to come. Norfolk Chief Constable Paul Sanford said her devotion to duty during her 70-year reign has been inspirational, and I believe people across the country are deeply proud to have lived with her as their queen. The Archbishops of Canterbury and York shared memories of spending time with the Queen and her family at Sandringham. The Most Reverend Justin Welby said, "One of the greatest privileges of sitting on these benches is that within a year or so of becoming a diocesan bishop, you're invited to spend a weekend at Sandringham." She had a dry sense of humour and the ability to spot the absurd. The Church of England was very capable of giving her material, but she never exercised that at the expense of others. Her memory when I saw her last in June was as sharp as it could ever have been. She remembered meetings 40, 50 years ago and drew lessons from those for times to speak of today and what we need to learn. The Archbishop of York recalled laughing with the Queen over a fiendishly difficult jigsaw they attempted together at Sandringham, while the Bishop of St Albans, the Right Reverend Alan Smith, also recounted a trip to the late Queen's Norfolk estate, where he was treated to a ride in the monarch's Range Rover. He said, "She came out very briskly and shouted across to me, 'Jump in, Bishop, I'm driving.' She set off at a rate of knots. I was holding on for dear life. She taught me a great deal about prayer at that particular point." Bishops of Norwich were regularly invited to join the royal family after Christmas. As Supreme Governor of the Church of England, she has spoken movingly about her own faith, and it's clear that she reigned out of a deep sense of God's calling upon her life, a life of anointed service, said the Bishop of Norwich, the Right Reverend Graham Usher. The Galston man responsible for organising some of the great celebrations of the later decades of Her Majesty's reign was her official pageant master, Bruno Peake. "All I can say is that we've lost the mother of the nation and the mother of the Commonwealth," he said. One of her final official acts, just 2 days before her death, was to formally appoint South West Norfolk MP Liz Truss as the country's new Prime Minister, who said, "Through thick and thin, Queen Elizabeth II provided us with the stability and the strength that we needed. She was the very spirit of Great Britain, and that spirit will endure." It's difficult to believe that we will never again see our Queen arriving at King's Lynn Station en route to Sandringham, or dressed in those familiar bright hat, jacket, skirt, handbag outfits cleverly designed to make her visible from the back of a crowd bending to take flowers from a child. For more than 70 years, she fulfilled with wisdom and grace her promise to devote herself to her people. As her son, the new King Charles III, said, quoting Shakespeare from the First Elizabethan Age, "May flights of angels sing thee to thy rest."